Hello and welcome to The Shape of Work, a podcast series by SpringWorks. My name is Anoop and I am your host. Each week, we'll be talking to top people managers across the world on the future of work and how it's shaping our workplace. So sit back and get ready to find out more from these movers and shakers as we have a no-holds-barred, anything-goes conversation with them about their journey, their insights, their thoughts, and most importantly, their ideas and vision for the workplace of the future. Join in on the conversation, leave a comment, and don't forget to hit that subscribe button.
Welcome to another episode of the Shape of Work podcast. Joining me today is Nishchay Sood, President, Asia-Pacific, Middle East and Africa at Edcast. Thank you so much for joining us, Nishchay.
Thanks, Junius. Pleasure.
Great. So, Nishchay, we do this with all our guests. Typically, you know, at the start of the episode, we like to get to know them better. So, walk us through your journey. I think you have a career that's spanning over 20 years, right? Two decades. So, walk us through that. How did it all start?
Well, Junius, it's now going to be 25 years. So, time is catching up. And I've had the good fortune of working in 25 countries. With small and big companies across industries, with governments. And essentially, I've worked with the HR fraternity and the business community to try and help make this world a better place to work. So if the mantra were one, is, you know, it would really boil down to working with organizations to try and ensure that we can optimize people's potential and performance in the pursuit of higher business performance. My journey started with a company called Hewitt Associates. I worked with them for 11 and a half years. I used to run the Asia-Pacific region for them for a line of business called Rewards and Performance. Again, good fortune that I have the fiat of being the youngest global partner. At the age of 30, I became a partner with them.
Wow.
Moved on to a very interesting space, which was actually setting up a leadership institute. It's called the School of Inspired Leadership, which has now been in existence for over a decade. And I was the founding president for that business school or leadership institute in India. Taught, I'm a teacher at heart. I love teaching. I spend a lot of time with business schools, with HR audiences, talking to them about different experiences that I've had and that can help them. I serve a lot on, I serve on many associations, on the board of NHRDN for 4 years, was the president for the Delhi NCR chapter, began the Ram Charan Awards in India. So a number of things that keep me busy. From soil, I moved on to becoming the CEO and managing director for Mercer in India, which is another blue chip HR consulting. From there, I moved to KPMG, where I was a senior partner, spent 6 years with them, and now I've completed 3 years with Edcast. So yeah, a long story.
You've been all over the place, but what really called out to you when it came to L&D, right? Right now, if I'm not wrong, you work with Edcast, which is primarily into training and development, right?
Yes. So Edcast is actually a talent experience platform that specializes in the areas of knowledge management, in skilling, upskilling, in personalization, and it's an AI-powered platform. It's now recognized as a global leader in this space, named as a tech pioneer by the World Economic Forum. We work primarily with Fortune 500 companies and Global 2000 companies, as well as governments and associations. With the spirit and with the intention of making organizations smarter as far as learning and development is concerned.
Great. So my question here is going to be, what is it about L&D that, you know, called out to you, right? Across all the things that you worked, right? And you're an MBA in finance. Why was it L&D? Why was it training and development? Why was it upskilling and things like that?
So It's an interesting question. Why? Number one, remember, I have a passion for teaching, and I began a leadership institute, and I taught. And number two, I think that was a period of time wherein I also believed that, you know, to power the journey of others, you must continue to power up yourself, which is about the rituals and the practices of being a keen and active everyday learner. Human beings are curious by nature. They have to continue to evolve. And you have to continue to elevate your state of consciousness, because only when you do that are you able to solve the problems that you're currently facing. Otherwise, that problem itself wouldn't have existed. So in that spirit, obviously having worked with, you know, companies big and small across industries, across the world, it was clear that the one aspect that differentiates people and what they bring to an organization is informed by the level of their capability. Of course, there is commitment, you know, how engaged you are, but and the values that they preach and follow. But without capability and without its application, organizations wouldn't be able to move their journey forward. And for me, learning and development I never saw it as front and center in organizations, which has now changed because people have recognized, you know, CEOs have recognized, boards have recognized, management teams have recognized, HR has recognized that one central pillar, which was given lip service in the past, mustn't be treated so any longer. And it requires an investment, it requires a commitment on our part as talent development leaders, HR leaders, to put give learning its due, give it the right place, build a culture of commitment, build a ongoing culture of continuous learning rather than look at learning as compliance driven.
Now, in one of your interviews, you quoted, in most organizations today, learning is primarily seen to be a compliance-driven requirement rather than a culture-driven commitment. In your opinion, what should an organization do to fill this gap? Are there any practices as such that you've personally followed?
You know, Junius, learning culture, in my opinion, is the lifeline of an organization's ecosystem. And if I were to, you know, provide you a definition, it is a collection of beliefs, processes, and practices that enable individuals to learn and grow. And borrowing from Dr. Kalam, he said, you know, true learning is not a process of pouring in from without, but a calling forth what is within. It's a process of nurturing, of allowing, of evoking. It is a process of bringing forth the person that one is meant to be. And we know that creating a culture of learning is by no means an easy ask. This being true for companies of all sizes. In fact, LinkedIn's workplace learning report asked L&D professionals across the globe, what was their biggest challenge in the year 2020? And 42% reported creating a culture of learning as their biggest challenge. And we at CAST, you know, we've been pioneering research in the field of learning and development. It's called the LHI study. Now we run studies across India, Africa, Middle East, and currently running one in Europe and US. And this is a comprehensive research which assesses the learning health of an organization. And 124 organizations participated this year in the India edition. Here are some interesting insights which relate to learning culture. You know, our research revealed that learning is currently perceived to be moderately valuable for employee development, and employees need to undertake structured learning programs as they progress through levels. 32% of the surveyed organizations report that employees associate learning with compliance and mandatory training only, and they are only reactive users when it comes to learning services mandated by learning and development. self-driven learning will come as a natural corollary to well-designed talent programs that allow individuals to achieve mastery in their fields of interest or appeal to their sense of purpose. So learning should be treasured and not mandated. So the idea then is for us to create a talent development ecosystem to appeal to learners and for all learners to be equally motivated in their own development. So what's needed? Number one, learning initiatives must be intrinsically driven for ensuring commitment over compliance. Learning leaders across the globe identified their top priorities, amongst which 35% of L&D professionals said enabling self-directed learning with online learning solutions is amongst their top strategic priorities. Learning culture, what does it do? It drives a quest for independent quest for knowledge, and promotes shared learning directed towards the goal of an organization. So the burning question really is, what are we doing about it? For learning to be truly embedded within the business, L&D professionals first have to evaluate their current learning environment in their organization and take action at an organization level, at a team level, and at an individual level. So at an organizational level, businesses need structures and systems in place, right, to support learning, as well as a shared vision for learning and transformation. At a team level, teams are where social learning and dialogue occur. And managers have an important role to play in ensuring that employees also have the relevant support for learning. L&D professionals can support managers to prioritize time and the resources for formal and both informal learning and encourage them to be role models to demonstrate how learning is a part of everyone's role and share their learning in their team trainings, encourage reflection as part of project evaluation. And finally, at the individual level, you know, L&D professionals need to start engaging with employees to consistently communicate the opportunities, the learning opportunities across the organization and highlight everyone's role in organizational and team learning. How does an individual benefit? How can they grow their careers? How does learning align with their current job requirements? Here are some winning strokes that I've personally seen to work across organizations. One, curated knowledge and programs available for learners to choose from, keeping in mind what is best for them. Learning tailored to individual differences and styles, which is essentially boiling down personalization. Self-owned interest, intrinsic learning with some guidance on long-term learning journey. Because learning is not infrequent boxed up events, right? It is a journey. It is not a destination. And finally, how do we continue to drive this culture change, which will require us to create an environment where individuals experience work as an opportunity for growth, an opportunity for self-discovery? It would demand that we spend time teaching, learning, helping each other develop. And as learning leaders, we need to actively work to create a culture of engagement and high performance. We need to actively promote and facilitate networking and mentoring opportunities to fortify relationships, to build this cohesive culture for improved outcomes and healthier organizations.
Of late, I've been hearing about gamifying how this is done. Any thoughts on that?
You know, speaking of gamification, I see it as a very important aspect of rewarding and recognizing individuals. And we know that when we make learners famous by recognizing them, by promoting their efforts, publicly in public forums within the organization and outside, it has a big impact on A, sending a clear message to individuals within the company that learning is recognized to be a business process which is integral to their success. You can create, through gamification, create healthy competition within an organization and have these leaderboards, as an example, or micro-credentials, just like video gaming, right? The video gaming industry is one of the biggest in the world. And if you can bring that into the sphere of learning and development and create this healthy competition, provide these badges on completion of critical tasks or assignments, which can then be shared on LinkedIn and other social platforms. That type of recognition really does help support, build the right learner behaviors within the organization.
Thanks so much for that. Now, do you feel by creating an L&D-oriented culture, a company can improve their retention rates as well as the profitability of the organization? And how should one create parallels between these factors?
Great question. Here's my view. I believe that the rate at which you and your employees learn may well become your only competitive sustainable advantage. And in today's workplace, where there is constant and rapid change, and therefore even a greater need to remain competitive, the best strategy for an organization is to create a multifaceted and flexible learning ecosystem. The best strategy is to educate the learner on how to be a smart consumer. The best strategy is to set and maintain context and get out of the learner's way. Now, learning fitness or learning health, as we refer to it at EdCast, is more likely to achieve benefits related to growth in the competitive climate, 7 times more likely to respond faster to changing business conditions, 3 times more likely to achieve overall productivity benefits, including improved talent strategies, and 3 times more likely to have improved sustainability and profitability, including customer satisfaction. In fact, LinkedIn, they came out with some very interesting research. They said 94% of employees would stay at a company longer if it invested in their learning and development. So coming to your point of retention. And adding to this, 56% of employees say career growth and opportunity is more important than salary. So here are the key highlights, right? Career opportunities and tailored L&D initiatives are a significant retention driver. Employees are 8 times more likely to work for a company they trust to provide them with a career. We know through Gallup research that 2/3 of the workforce globally is actually not engaged. So what can you do? What can you do if you know that 2/3 of the workforce is disengaged and you know that people are looking for an organization that can actually prepare them for the future of work, can give them a career, can give them these differentiated career opportunities and tailor-made L&D opportunities? That's really where the rubber hits the road. And the talent market today, as we see in 2021, is historically tight, with a record 4 million workers quitting their jobs in April 2021 alone. According to McKinsey, 40% of employees stated they're at least somewhat likely to leave their current job in the next 3 to 6 months. And therefore, L&D can play an instrumental role in retaining your top talent. It is also interesting to know that 70% of employees surveyed by McKinsey said that their sense of purpose is largely defined by work. Thus, providing developmental opportunities essential to retain your top talent really become supreme, right? in terms of the pecking order. And the best way to provide your employees with career pathways is by giving them access to the learning they need. That's really what counts. So there is this triangulation of success, if I may, between learning. So you have to first create this learning culture, the everyday habits of a learner, a keen and active learner. The second, skilling, because there are certain skill gaps that need to be bridged, right? For me to be a higher order performer, I need certain critical skills. We know that the world of business is being disrupted every day. And that is putting demands on new skills that are needed to be a better and a different version of myself. That's the real demand for me to continue to remain relevant. And the third, that ultimately by this, you know, exhibiting the everyday habits of a learner, by bridging the skill gaps, that means I'm getting the skills that I need to do my job, I want to see progress. I want to see progress in the form of what? In the form of a better career. Careers could be, it could be vertical movement, it could be horizontal, but ultimately there should be meaning to the work. There should be challenge to the work being that is coming my way. And monetarily, that should also, you know, I should see a visible difference in before I had the requisite skills and after I had the requisite skills.
You mentioned skilling, right? And with regards to that, I do have a question. Upskilling and reskilling are the two main pillars of any L&D function. Now, what is your take on enabling technology in this age of learning revolution? And how can companies leverage that for their own growth? Of late, I will admit, I think in the last 2 years at least, I've noticed a lot of this upskilling and reskilling being mentioned, right? Even today, when you look at it, it's not the hard work that people are paid for, it's the skills that they possess. So how can companies leverage that for their own growth?
You know, we've been seeing that and many research reports refer to the same inference, that COVID-19 actually has accelerated the arrival of the future of work. The World Economic Forum said 84% of employers are set to rapidly digitize working processes. And organizations that made their technology a partner in work generated significant opportunities that extended beyond pure efficiency. They fundamentally began to reshape how their businesses perform, with benefits for both customers and employees alike. So really what has made a big difference is companies that made technology that their ally, their partner in work, saw significant benefits. This period also put pressure on HR departments to be more analytical, data-driven, and strategic. Clearly being, you know, you had to be more agile than ever before. And L&D teams themselves had to continue to reskill and upskill themselves, right? As I mentioned, to power the journey of others, you must power yourself. During this period of, you know, the pandemic, we also saw that there was an acceleration in the adoption of remote working and digital learning tools across organizations. With the change in the corporate landscape, organizations continued to leverage technology to bridge this skill gap to enable skilling, upskilling, and reskilling. And the use of AI and machine learning gained a lot of momentum, continues to gain momentum. This creating more personalized, relevant experiences for employees. And we also saw AI was being used to enhance the overall experience from hire to retire, improving both transparency and inclusion. Now let's do a deep dive on the L&D landscape itself. And there were visible shifts that took place specific to L&Ds. You know, as we look at L&D tools and platforms in the marketplace, clearly there was an explosion that took place there. and a clear move away from learning management system, the classic LMS, as being the core learning platform to those that are dynamic, promote self-directed learning, personalized learning experiences that employees are looking for, like learning experience platforms. In fact, the Fosway Group reported collaborative learning, virtual classroom experiences, and the learning experience platform as being most successful in supporting organizations during the pandemic. Now, initially, juniors, digital was a part of the strategy. And now it has become clear that it is the strategy. Josh Burson, we know very well, the founder and dean of the Josh Burson Academy and global analyst, he took out this very interesting report on HR Tech, the definitive guide. And clearly in that report, he shares that hundreds of new vendors are developing video authoring, micro-learning, mobile learning, virtual reality, search, AI recommendation engines, and even chatbots for learning. And given that global L&D spending is around $220 billion, roughly 12% of this goes into various forms of tools, that market is over $40 billion in size. Some of these very interesting emerging trends that he refers to. One is action platforms are replacing analytics and feedback tools. An increased number of HR tools is expected to be accessible through voice recognition. AI, data-driven marketing, AR, VR are a few technological advancements that have emerged as essential for businesses to sustain and thrive, and learning in the flow of work, which I see as a blessing, as a true, you know, development that has transformed and brought learning and working closer together, which continues to emerge as the biggest trend in HR and L&D.
Now, moving on, I did read in one of your interviews that you quoted, each organization must become a learning organization if it has to survive, sustain, and grow. And like you mentioned earlier, yes, the pandemic has sort of propelled this. But with regards to just L&D, right, how much has the pandemic sort of affected how companies train and develop their employees since, you know, last year, 2020?
Well, tremendously. It's been, if there were, there have been many areas that have been beneficially impacted by the pandemic. However strange that may sound, but clearly there were many new developments. As we saw, the tech world exploded, new tools came out, mindset change, spotlight back on skilling, urgency. And clearly, organizations did revamp their approach in numerous aspects of the workplace as a result of the pandemic. And learning and development was no exceptions. 94% of L&D professionals reported that they changed their L&D strategy in response to COVID-19, with 2 in 3 making significant changes to what they do and how they do it. Organizations witnessed a major swing to digital learning. So that's one. Clearly, you know, moving away from classrooms to online learning, this entire shift from push to pull-based learning, this entire shift from compliance-driven learning to more learning that promoted this the true spirit and culture behind why one should learn and how it benefits individuals. We saw spends on digital learning platforms, digital learning content, learning analytics, all of that. So, you know, massive shift and a lot of monies that were earlier never being spent were beginning to get spent, and a lot of money that sat in different cost centers was reallocated, making known that learning and development is at the heart of transformation. Skill-based hiring versus hiring on the basis of traditional college degrees started to gain popularity. I spoke about micro-credentials, and you know, organizations started obviously being more open to the idea of looking at skill-based credentials and micro-credentials as opposed to traditional college degrees. they balanced this entire focus of long-term and short-term when it came to learning. So clearly, you know, the skill stack that was rapidly transforming, that was known, and that created a lot of gaps. But equally, and then there was an urgency to bridge those gaps, but equally organizations were addressing longer-term learning needs by honing skills such as creativity and innovation that require a longer-term approach because they are harder to master versus bridging, you know, a skill gap in data literacy or in AI, which you can bridge very quickly. And COVID-19 put the spotlight on employee well-being and the L&D community began to realize that it's important to build psychological capital, right? It was important to build positivity, confidence, ensure that there is less stress, less fatigue, less burnout, because otherwise that would have started having a negative impact on efficiency and bottom line. So how do you build this resilience, agility, empathy, mental and physical wellness for employees in the organization?
When a candidate thinks about applying for a company, right? Why is it that today, you know, companies, I'm not sure, right? At least to the best of my knowledge, what I've observed is companies don't really promote that they have a great L&D, culture, a great learning culture. Instead, you know, they're showing you pictures of flashy offices and team outings and things like that. Do you think there is a change that companies need to do with regards to their employer branding, talking about their learning culture today?
Absolutely, great point. It's a valid observation. Number one, in most companies there isn't a great learning culture. That is the reality. But the ones that And that's fast changing. So, I mean, no disrespect to organizations. We carry out the Learning Health Index. It shows that corporate India is operating at 2/3 of its potential. You know, the learning health score overall is roughly 66, 67. And that obviously shows that there is a lot of room for improvement. Number two, there are companies that have done it. I mean, GE for the longest period was considered the mecca of learning. And it was an integral part of its brand, employer brand, business brand. Similarly, even Genpact today, you'd see a lot of posts, and we work very closely with Genpact. They use Edcast, and they run this program called Genome. You should see the posts that Tiger, their CEO, or Piyush Mehta, their head of HR, or Gianni, their chief innovation officer, keep putting the spotlight on learning and the opportunities that they have within the organization and their philosophy and how it impacts business. So one is to walk the talk. So, you know, otherwise very soon you'd be found out, right? You can say great things in social media and not practice them, and that can be more detrimental. Yeah. And you can then, or you can start building a healthy learning ecosystem, building that brand of learning that really matters and counts for employees. And they experience that when they join the organization in its true sense. That builds advocacy. Because everybody, you know, all candidates do their research, right? They'll go to Glassdoor, okay. They'll speak to existing employees. They'll do their own background check to ensure that, is this the kind of organization I'd like to be associated with? And we know that learning and development is a top priority, at least for the millennials, for the younger age group. That's what really counts for them.
Got it. Great. So my last question for today, Nishay, would be, what is your take on organizations creating peer-to-peer learning initiatives to create a culture of collaboration and ownership? I think we did slightly touch upon this when you said that when an organization takes up L&D, they have to look at it at an org level, at a team level, and then at an individual level, right? And at that team level is where the collaboration, the social learning takes place. So what are, according to you, some of the tips or ways in which this can be implemented?
You know, organizations see immense value in adding social learning to the mix, thereby harnessing collective intelligence and propagating this culture of teamwork and cohesion and collaboration. Mm-hmm. And we know that white spaces in an organization are only filled through cross-functional teams. So they are teams and they are teams of teams. And this has been one of the weakest areas that I have seen in my consulting area, is how do you get people to work with one another in that true spirit? Because we are born not to compete with each other, but to complete each other. That's the philosophy. And there is so much intelligence, collective intelligence, that needs to be harnessed and tapped. So social learning and adding social learning to the mix is a very, very important ingredient. And 77% of organizations, based on our EDCAST Learning Health Index research, are already implementing it or have planned its implementation in the next 1 or 2 years. We saw a decrease in ILT, and there were concerns around how this community-based learning and social learning would have an impact on learner engagement. And it's surprising to note that learners who use social features to engage in community-based learning spend 30x more hours learning as compared to those who didn't. Community-based learning uses a blended online learning approach, that is VILT, and online learning, right? So you do still need the instructor, it's virtual. And it's supported by social features such as course recommendations for managers or collaboration and knowledge sharing through chat or online groups. And this increased interactivity between learners and instructors has been seen over the last 2 years. In fact, there has been an 1100% increase in people joining learning groups, with a higher number of young people joining as compared to their older colleagues. LinkedIn found a 225% increase in courses shared with a learner's professional network and a 121% increase in activity in course question and answers, including both learners and instructors. What does this tell us? It makes it clear that by incorporating more community-based learning programs and social learning to the mix, people feel more connected and will spend more time with one another. It will improve collaboration. It will also improve the quality of knowledge because you can tap it. A lot of this knowledge is currently tacit, and through this interaction can be codified, be made explicit, and the whole organization can benefit from it.
Great. Well, Nishchay, it's been sublime talking to you. Our conversation was really eye-opening, especially some of the stats that you mentioned. They were mind-boggling, right? And I wasn't aware of this. I am checking out EDCAST's report with, you know, the LHI report that you mentioned. We'll be sure to probably include that in the description for this podcast. So thanks so much for bringing that up. Again, thank you so much for joining us here and giving us the opportunity to host you and for sharing all of this stuff that you've mentioned here today.
Junius, the pleasure is all mine. Thank you for the invite. I look forward to hearing the podcast and pray and wish for your continued success and well-being.
Thank you so much, Nishchay. Wish you the same. Have a fantastic day ahead.
Thank you.